Hi, welcome to the Growth.me summary of Fooled by Randomness by Nassim Taleb. Fooled by Randomness is full of ideas for finance and investing that go against what most people practice. Nassim Taleb says that randomness controls our lives much more than we think, but we can also learn tools to protect against life's uncertainty. Looking at the online reviews for this book, on Amazon it has 4.4 stars, and on Goodreads it has 4.1 stars. Positive reviewers found powerful ideas in the book that criticize conventional wisdom, and also they're explained in a fun and interesting writing style. But there were some critical reviewers who were turned off by Nassim Taleb's tone, sometimes describing it as arrogant, and they wanted the book to be shorter. Now, our top quote from this book is, "Remember that nobody accepts randomness in his own success, only his failure." And now let's begin. People love or hate Nassim Taleb. At least that was my impression reading about this book online. Some people believe he's an original thinker that revolutionized their understanding of the world. Others say his writing is full of pride and repetition. So who is right, the fans or the critics? Well, I think people who have some experience in financial trading may find Taleb's ideas more valuable, or at least relatable. They've probably seen some of his examples mentioned in the book, and seen many smart people making the errors described by Nassim Taleb. On the other hand, people who do not practice trading may tend to oversimplify his ideas into common sense mottos like bad things happen or success is all random, and I think they're more likely to miss the value in this writing. Anyway, this book has three parts. Part one explains uncommon ideas for probability. Nassim Taleb shares his trading strategy that is based on suffering frequent small losses but winning a few very large gains. And then part two explains cognitive biases that we all have. Our decisions are often flawed because our minds do not easily think in terms of abstract probability. In other words, we get fooled easily. And then part three shares strategies for facing randomness. Taleb himself avoids information filled with noise, such as the news, and he follows a stoic approach towards life, which we'll talk about. Here's a little bit about the author. Nassim Taleb is a financial trader and best-selling author of five books, including The Black Swan, which we have a summary about on Growth.me. Since 2008, he's been a professor of risk engineering at New York University. Taleb's trading strategy was different than most other professionals because he aimed to make money not just when markets went up, but also when they went down during unexpected black swan events. And so he did very well during financial crises of 1987 and 2007. Okay, so let's get started with lesson number one, remain uncertain, having less confidence in current theories and models. If history shows us anything, then it shows us things are always going wrong in unexpected ways. Yet we never seem to learn that lesson. We continue to act as if the future will always be like the past. And this mistaken attitude is especially clear in financial trading, the field Nassim Taleb has worked in for decades. Over and over again, he has seen smart and intellectual people become tricked into a false sense of confidence by their abstract models and theories. And then, bam, another huge unexpected crash happens, and many lifetimes of earnings are wiped out in a few days. In the financial world, that's called blowing up. But we have to ask, if our largest institutions and authorities were unable to predict the big crashes of the past, maybe we should assume they're flying blind today also. If crashes and crises happen over and over again, should we really treat them as something unexpected? Perhaps we should think we just don't know when the next one will happen. And instead, maybe we should accept life's inherent randomness and build our trading strategies to work around those worst-case outcomes so they will not devastate us in the future. Well, Nassim Taleb asked those kinds of questions a long time ago, which led him to approach trading in a very different way from most others. And that's how he managed to thrive during some of the darkest market cycles in recent history. He actually made money when events happened that were large and negative and supposedly unexpected. Let's jump into a bit of the philosophy that caused Nassim Taleb to come to his viewpoints. In the 1700s, the philosopher David Hume wrote about the problem of induction, which raised important questions about whether we can really be sure of any cause and effect relationships in life. He wrote about how no matter how many times we see something happen like the sun rising, that doesn't guarantee it will happen again tomorrow. Then in the early 1900s, Karl Popper took that idea further and revolutionized science with his concept of falsification. Popper argued that a scientific theory can never be fully proven to be true, it can only really be proven false. And that kind of fundamental uncertainty about the future forms the cornerstone of Nassim Taleb's approach towards trading and life in general. And the most important thing in Taleb's eyes is to remember that we don't really know much. Even the most advanced human theories about the universe will eventually be outdated, just as Newton's theories are useful, but eventually they couldn't explain everything in the universe, so we needed to move on to newer theories like quantum physics, and eventually those ones will be replaced too. Well, this whole thing reminds me of the great early philosopher Socrates, who said, "All I know is that I know nothing." It's a motto of humility and skepticism that I think summarizes Nassim Taleb's overall viewpoints very well. And I think it's very easy for casual readers who aren't very involved in finance to hear this idea and to dismiss it, almost like common sense. You know, someone might say, okay, so we can never really be sure about the sun rising, but how is that useful in my life? Of course we know the sun will rise, almost definitely. Well, in the real world of trading and economics, there are most professionals who put a lot of confidence in abstract models used to find patterns in past market data and try to predict risk clearly. So it's really towards those people that Taleb is writing most of all, to warn them that abstract theoretical models are blind, especially towards large, rare, and unexpected events, which will cause devastation. To summarize this first lesson, most traders and economists put too much confidence in abstract models, and that blinds them to the risks of large and rare events that the models do not see, like the many unexpected crashes that have happened throughout history. Next, we have lesson two, be inconsistent, remaining independent of our past beliefs. There's something very funny about humans. We often become married to our opinions, positions, or beliefs. Staying attached to a past position can often benefit our careers and relationships, making us appear more dependable and consistent. So it's no wonder why people have this tendency. But in financial trading, it can be a quick route to disaster. And I think in psychology, this would be called the sunk cost fallacy. In another book, there's a professor, Robert Cialdini, who wrote about a study from the 1960s that illustrates this psychological effect very clearly. You see, researchers back then went door to door and they asked people to put a small sticker in their window that said, "Drive carefully." And then 2 weeks later, they again went door to door and they asked people to put a large sign on their front lawns with that same message. And what they found was incredible. People were 4 times more likely to agree to that large request if they had first agreed to the small sticker beforehand. In other words, making that small step made people feel almost obligated to appear consistent with their past actions. You can learn more interesting things like this in our summary of Influence by Robert Cialdini on growth.me, where this anecdote comes from. So, how can we remain flexible about our opinions? Well, Taleb says the first step is to avoid being certain about anything, and instead view our beliefs as being more or less probable, almost like on a sliding scale from 0 to 100. And in his eyes, one of the best models for this is the financial speculator George Soros, who changes his mind extremely quickly in reaction to new information that he was wrong. There's another great businessman named Sam Walton, the founder of Walmart, and he was always trying new experiments in his stores and then changing his beliefs based on the results. And that kind of adaptability appeared to be a key to Walmart's incredible growth. In his autobiography, Sam wrote, quote, "But all this requires overcoming one of the most powerful forces in human nature, the resistance to change. To succeed in this world, you have to change all the time," end quote. And you can read more about this in our summary of his book, Made in America by Sam Walton on growth.me. To summarize this lesson, humans have a natural tendency to become attached to our past positions, which often causes failure in business. Instead, we must avoid certainty in our beliefs, only seeing them as more or less probable, and trying to change them quickly in light of new information. And now lesson 3, don't value track records. Past success may not mean anything. We should generally ignore track records, says Nassim Taleb. And he argues that a few years of success is caused by luck much more often than we think, though we mistakenly assume it's caused by skill. In fact, many wealthy financial people who take great pride in their past performance would find this view difficult to accept and even offensive. And so they are fooled over and over again when they see a successful track record held by a trader, a fund, or a CEO. Let's look quickly at three ways that success may be the result of hidden luck. The first way is survivorship bias. This is the idea that we only pay attention to the winners in a field, not the losers. So we look at those people who survived and value their advice, but we often ignore that many people who failed could have followed the exact same advice as the survivors and still failed. How can we escape this survivorship bias? Well, by paying attention to the initial sample size. And that means looking at all the people who made an attempt from the beginning, not just those who ended up succeeding. For example, let's say we studied 500 CEOs over 5 years, and we found later that 50 of them successfully grew their companies. Well, many people would begin by just looking at those 50 successful CEOs and trying to figure out their strategy, but because we started at the beginning, we can see that only 10% succeeded. And 10% of those CEOs could have simply gotten lucky. Okay, a second way people can get lucky is through chaos theory. This is also called the butterfly effect. And this is the idea that small causes can cause huge disproportionate chain reactions. In many people's lives, a small stroke of luck or advantage at the beginning can propel them to wealth and fame. For example, Bill Gates is very smart and very hardworking. But is he thousands of times more smart and hardworking than other computer programmers? Definitely not. But his software Windows was lucky in its timing to become the dominant operating system at the right time, which essentially gave Bill Gates a monopoly on the market and protection from all competition. And if you want to learn more about these kinds of legal monopolies, take a look at our summary of the billionaire Peter Thiel's book, which is called 0 to 1. A third way people can get lucky is through short-term evolutionary fitness. Some groups of traders can succeed big for years, Then suddenly, they're all wiped out at once by unexpected change in the markets. For example, Taleb shares that many traders bought bonds in emerging markets, and they did very well from 1992 until 1998, and then they all blew up at once. How does that happen? Well, because their strategy happened to be the right fit for the current market cycle, but when the cycle inevitably changed to a different one, they no longer survived. Wow. That's a lot of ways that successful people could simply be lucky. And I think it's tempting to oversimplify the ideas in this book into success is all random. But that's not what Nassim Taleb is saying. His message is really not that randomness determines everything, but just that it plays a much larger role than we automatically assume, especially in fields like trading, entrepreneurship, and creative arts. To summarize this lesson, even several year-long track records of success may be the result of randomness more often than we assume because of number one, survivorship bias, which is paying attention only to winners, number two, chaos theory, which is a small bit of luck compounding over time, and number three, short-term evolutionary fitness, which means strategies that work for the current market cycle only. Next, we have lesson four. Value certainty, estimating the risk in a path to success. So how can we figure out how strong of a role that randomness played in someone's success? Well, the first step is to consider the alternative histories or paths. So to understand this, imagine someone who won the lottery. They could have lived millions of alternative histories where they bought a lottery ticket and they didn't win. On the other hand, a successful doctor has far fewer alternative histories where they entered medical school and failed simply due to bad luck alone. And so by Taleb's unique method of accounting, he says the doctor's success is worth a lot more than a gambler's because it's a lot more certain, and we should value that certainty. And this is also how Taleb avoids feeling too envious when some naive young trader begins making a lot more money than him. Because he sees they will usually blow up after a few years, losing all that money, while Taleb's strategy, which is slower, also insures him against incredible losses. And so here's the main point. We should not judge a decision by whether it succeeded or failed in hindsight, but by how likely it was to succeed at the time it was made. And I think this point is made repeatedly throughout the book because it really is a counterintuitive way of thinking. Most of us automatically think that like a profitable business is doing things right, and a failed one did things wrong. But if we're trying to think clearly about risk and probability, then we must avoid those kinds of oversimplified conclusions. And finally, there is an interesting tool called Monte Carlo simulations. This is a computer tool for calculations that allows someone to simulate millions of alternative paths quickly. So they let someone find an answer to complex problems by entering in the right variables into a computer and then letting it do the hard work without complex mathematics. And so that's another way to find out alternative histories. But even more important than that tool is simply the approach of considering these alternative histories in our daily thinking. To summarize this lesson, when looking at examples of success, we should consider the alternative histories that could have happened, not just what did happen. For example, a doctor's success is relatively more certain than a lottery winner's, so it should be worth a lot more. And now we have lesson five, limit your maximum costs, insuring against unlikely worst-case scenarios. Professionals will often ask Nassim Taleb whether a market is going up or down. In investing jargon, they may ask if he is bullish or bearish. Well, Nassim Taleb considers this a bad question because it misses the most critical piece of information, which is by how much the market could go up or down by. You see, when it comes to trading, most people focus on those probabilities of investments going up or down, but then they're blind to something which is often much more important, which are asymmetrical outcomes. An asymmetrical outcome is when the positive and negative future outcomes of a decision can be extremely different from each other. You see, traders often make decisions by looking at what the average or median expected outcome may be. However, when there are asymmetrical outcomes, the average expected outcome actually hides critical information that exposes those traders to hidden risks. Let's make this a bit more concrete so you can understand. Nassim Taleb's successful strategy as a trader relied on these asymmetrical outcomes. When he was buying options, he lost money the majority of the time, but only a little money. But he also gained money occasionally, but when he did, he gained a lot of it, which more than made up for what he'd lost. Imagine it's like losing a lot of $1 bills often, but then winning a $50 bill every once in a while, which more than makes up for the losses. So that's kind of an example of asymmetrical outcomes. So this book often references the work of Daniel Kahneman, who created the field of behavioral economics and won a Nobel Memorial Prize in economics. And one of the cornerstones of Kahneman's major theory is something called loss aversion. And that means humans are 2 to 3 times more motivated by avoiding loss than by winning gain. And this psychological tendency would make Nassim Taleb's strategy of many, many small losses very emotionally difficult for most people to follow, even if it is a right strategy. We're much more designed to be happy with small, steady increases. You can learn more about these kinds of ideas in our summary of Thinking Fast and Slow by Daniel Kahneman. Now, many traders are the exact opposite of Nassim Taleb. They follow a strategy that rewards them with frequent gains, but then they're blind to the small risk of a huge loss. And that risk is often not really small, but actually inevitable. So one of the best ways we can avoid those large losses that some traders suffer is by having a clear stop loss point. That means deciding beforehand what price we will sell at. Traders that don't use stop losses tend to multiply their losses because as things are going down, they continue fooling themselves with a changing story of what is happening. So if we make that decision beforehand, we're much less likely to change our story and hang on to losses. To summarize this lesson, in many situations, what matters more than the odds of a positive or negative outcome are the asymmetrical gains or losses. This means you could have a small chance of losing money, but if you do, then you lose it all. Having clear, predetermined stop-loss points often helps avoid these kinds of disasters in trading. And now we have lesson 6, ignore short-term noise, focusing on ideas proven over years. A large part of Fooled by Randomness is dedicated to the many cognitive biases that all of us carry in our ways of thinking, and these biases cause us to make irrational mistakes in our decisions. Here are 3 quick examples of cognitive biases. First is specific versus general. We're more likely to be influenced by specific stories, individual narratives, and singular images. However, to think in terms of probability, we must look at events in a more general, abstract way, which often feels very difficult and counterintuitive for us humans. A second bias is called availability bias. Daniel Kahneman's research found that when people were asked questions, they relied heavily on how easily specific examples came to mind, how available those examples were in their minds. And so people were more likely to believe that an earthquake would soon happen in California than in America. And America obviously includes California. So when we're thinking, we often rely on those simplistic mental stereotypes, such as availability bias. A final bias is what I'll call soundbite culture. Ideas that can be explained easily tend to spread and survive, not necessarily the ideas which are most accurate. In fact, I remember reading in a different book that some studies showed that rhyming sentences were judged to be more truthful than non-rhyming sentences, when really they were just easier to remember. So throughout this book, Nassim Taleb severely criticizes journalists and the news media. He believes they feed our cognitive biases in the worst ways. They cause us to focus on the most short-term information, which is really 99% noise with very little value. And they also create endless narratives which aren't really connecting causes to effects. So perhaps we should all follow his lead and just plug our ears instead of pridefully assuming that we're smart enough to resist those kinds of forces in our thinking. And I think this criticism is justified. And personally, I've found that my thinking to be much clearer the less that I've paid attention to news. In Tim Ferriss's book, The 4-Hour Workweek, which we also have a summary on, he shares a strategy called the low information diet, and that is about increasing our productivity by eliminating sources of distraction, which includes the news, but also other forms of infotainment that are not directed towards achieving our immediate goals. So it's a low information diet that can make our minds clearer and make us more productive. To summarize this lesson, humans carry many cognitive biases that cause us to make systematic flaws in our decisions. We're more influenced by specific, concrete events rather than abstract probabilities, and perhaps the best move is plugging our ears to the short-term noise that feeds our biases, like the news media. And finally, we have lesson 7, control your behavior. Facing life's randomness with dignity. At the end of the day, how can we live our lives in the face of so much uncontrollable randomness? Well, the ancient philosophy of Stoicism may provide an answer. Nassim Taleb is a big fan of the book Letters from a Stoic by Seneca, an ancient philosopher in Greece. Stoicism is not about suppressing our emotions, like it may sound, but it's knowing that we are only ever really in control of our actions. And so beyond that, we should accept that what happens to us, because we should look for deeper reasons for what happens to us that come from fate, providence, God, etc. Marcus Aurelius was an ancient Roman emperor, and I think he wrote some of the best life advice ever in his private journal to himself, which was later published as the book Meditations. A main theme in that book is going along with life rather than resisting unfortunate events, and that means looking for the reasons for why things may have happened to us. Here's a quote. "Stop allowing your mind to be a slave, to be jerked about by selfish impulses, to kick against fate and the present, and to mistrust the future," end quote. You can read more wisdom like that in our summary of Meditations by Marcus Aurelius on growth.me. To summarize this lesson, in the face of life's randomness, ancient Stoic philosophy tells us that we can only control our actions. Beyond that, we must trust there's a deeper reason for misfortunes that come from a higher power, perhaps. Now let's look at 3 quick practical action steps for how we can apply this book to our lives. It is kind of an abstract book after all. So the first action step is to avoid survivorship bias. How? Look not just at the winners, but also try to find out how big the initial sample group was so that you can find out how many failures there were too. For example, if you see an advertisement for a successful mutual fund, promises, you know, big percentage returns, then try to research how many similar funds are launched every year. And, you know, if there are tens of thousands of funds like that launched every year, then that one successful mutual fund could easily just have gotten lucky with a few years' track record. The second action step is to limit your maximum costs. In life, we must all take risks all the time, but how can we keep the costs of those risks controlled? Well, if we're investing, we could write down a stop-loss point, which is a price that we will sell at. And we could also, you know, buy the right insurance if possible for the investment and so on. A third action step is protect your attention. Our focus can easily be grabbed by information that feeds our cognitive biases, such as vivid stories on the news. From now on, let's pay more attention to what grabs our attention and think twice about whether it's really helping us to live a good, rational life. Okay, I hope you enjoyed this book summary, and I'll see you in the next one.